We're going to give away a $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf. Edwin Watts Golf proudly has served golfers in the Southeast since 1968, home of the 90-day 100% satisfaction guarantee. They're located in Knoxville at the Pinnacle at Turkey Creek. They offer all major brand fitting carts. They're proud to be certified fitters for Titleist, Ping, Callaway, Mizuno, and TaylorMade. And they use the Launch Monitor club fitting technology, and they offer full service club repair. How about that? $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf if you can answer this trivia question. All right, this one's a little bit offbeat, but we're going to give it a shot here. All right, so Tennessee, this is a football question. Now, Tennessee, when it was ranked number one in the country, went 15-0. They've never lost a game when they were ranked number one in the country, and they pitched 9 shutouts when they were ranked number one in the country. Well, conversely, when they've played the number one team in the country, they're 2-14. Two of those teams shut out Tennessee. Name the two teams. When Tennessee has played the number one team in the nation in football, Tennessee's won only twice. They're 2-14. And two of the teams they lost to shut them out. Name those two teams. 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Who's the caller? Let's go to Hank. Hank, you're on the Sports Fix.
How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, fine. Hank, how are you?
Good.
Let's go to Hank.
Alabama and LSU.
Your first guess was correct. I thought most people would get that one, but you're half right. Thank you, Hank.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Let's go to Jack. Jack, you're on the Sports Fix.
Bit of a depressing question today, Jimmy, but I will go with Alabama and Georgia.
It is not Georgia.
Ah.
Okay. But thank you. Hey, at least they beat two teams ranked number one.
True.
So, all right. Let's go to David. David, you're on the Sports Fix.
Alabama and Florida?
It is Florida. Alabama and Florida. Alabama beat them like 27-0 one of those years. The Florida team did it, I think it was in 94, and they beat Tennessee like 31-0. That was a terrific Florida team that came into Knoxville. In fact, at that time, and I'd only covered Tennessee for 10 years, that's the best team, best visiting team I'd seen come into Neyland Stadium. But the answer, Alabama and Florida. Those are the two teams that were ranked number one that Tennessee played that shut out the Vols. Hey, David, you've won a $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf. So congratulations to you. We're going to put you on hold and get that prize to you, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Good job, David. And that'll do it for the Sports Fix at 6. I was reading an article that I thought was pretty interesting about the 10 biggest instant impact rookies from the NFL. As you can imagine, it's littered with SEC players, but I do want to go over that list, most of it, which I thought was pretty interesting. So the number one biggest impact rookie, Trevor Lawrence. Hard to argue that. He's going to start for the Jaguars. Here's one, and I'll be interested to see, will he have as good a year as Justin Herbert? Herbert had a nice supporting cast, a couple of really good receivers, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, a couple of nice running backs, not great, but nice running backs, Eckler being one of them. And he came in after the Tyrod Taylor issue and played outstanding. And I think Joe Burrow was going to be the rookie of the year until he got hurt and Herbert took off. Can Trevor Lawrence do that? I don't know. I'm not sure if his supporting cast is that good. I would bet against him doing that. All right, the next guy that's going to make a big impact, Zach Wilson, quarterback of the Jets. We mentioned earlier he was a 3-star unranked quarterback coming out of Utah. The next guy, Kyle Pitts, absolutely. Tight end for the Falcons. I think he'll be the most productive, impactful rookie of them all. He is a nightmare matchup. He's 6'6". He's 245. He can run. He's got an incredible catch radius. He's got a good quarterback to get him the football. They've got other good receivers around him, whether it's Calvin Ridley or Julio Jones. I think Pitts is going to have a great year. The next one, Ja'Marr Chase, Cincinnati Bengals. I'll look for him to put up some really big numbers reuniting with Joe Burrow. The next one is kind of hard. Yeah, you got Penei Sewell with the Lions. And then Devontae Smith, wide receiver with the Eagles. My opinion, the best route runner of all of the receivers. He just has a way of getting open, and I think he's going to do well. Now, the Eagles with Jalen Hurts at quarterback, he's reunited with Hurts, but I just don't think Hurts throws the ball well enough or is accurate enough to be a very effective NFL quarterback. That might hurt Devontae Smith's numbers, but I got no doubt Devontae Smith's going to find a way to get open. He's such a great route runner. Justin Fields, who started his career at Georgia, quarterback, Bears, he's going to be the starter. I don't know if it'll be game one or not, but he will start, and I think he will do well. The others that are listed, outside linebacker, pass rusher, Jalen Phillips with the Dolphins, Kwity Paye, defensive end for the Colts, and then this one, Najee Harris, running back, Steelers. I think he's going to be awesome. I remember a few years ago people projected Ezekiel Elliott would lead the league in rushing when he went to Dallas, and they were right. I don't see Harris doing that, but I think Pittsburgh needs to get back to running the football more, and they will certainly be able to do it with Harris. And to be honest with you, the first couple of years Harris was at Alabama, he didn't look like a great back. But, boy, this past year he was unbelievable. Now, who's not on that list? Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle was a higher pick than Devontae Smith, a higher pick than several people on this list. He is not the route runner, in my opinion, of Devontae Smith. He's faster. He will help in the return game, whether it's punts or kickoffs. But I don't know that he's going to catch a ton of balls because I don't think he is quite as good a route runner as Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase. So, anyway, that's a look at a list of some of the top players that will be instant impact rookies in the NFL draft. Make that 10-minute drive. Save thousands of dollars here at Oak Ridge Nissan on a variety of new Nissan vehicles. Remember Mother's Day this Sunday. They've also got great deals for veterans, great deals for those that are graduates. Come by Oak Ridge Nissan. Let's hear now from Tennessee pitcher Sean Hundley. He's done a great job out of the bullpen. He has recorded wins. He's recorded saves. He has been a versatile player going long innings, short innings, whatever has been needed. Here are comments leading up to Tennessee's series against Missouri from pitcher Sean Hundley.
There's so much baseball left to be played, but how good does it feel to be one of the 8 Tennessee baseball players that have earned their degree this semester?
Oh, yeah, it definitely feels pretty good. It's been a long 4 years. It's been really fun. And the 8 guys that you mentioned are very special. We're all very close, and it's been a fun ride with those guys.
Baseball and just, I'm sure, athletics in college are so routine-driven, but what's it like now knowing that previously it had been once you get past class, it's all about baseball. Now you're just past class.
Right. It's good. It's good when you know, at the end of a baseball season, you don't have to worry about school and stuff like that. So now you can just, you know, worry about baseball and winning. And, you know, once you get to a certain point, there's like three weekend series left. And, you know, the only thing on our mind is winning. And that's all we have left to do.
You were a freshman when when you made your first trip to Missouri. This is your second trip to Columbia with the Volunteers. And there's such a contrast between that trip and this trip. You go back to 2018. Tony Vitello's first year, you guys have exceeded expectations, and you come here, you wanting to win the series and get to the SEC tournament. Your return trip, you're tied for first in the Eastern Division, and there's so much that's within reach. How different is the program as a senior for you compared to your first experience and your first trip to Mizzou?
Yeah, I remember the last time we came to Missouri, we had to win two games to go to the SEC tournament, and now we're tied for first, and I think that's just how different the culture is. That the coaching staff has implemented into us. But yeah, I remember that, and it was we lost those two games, and we ended our season there, and now it's like we expect to win, and it's been really fun.
Your first SEC win came on that trip to Missouri. What do you remember about that performance as you were a big starter for Tennessee over the second half of that season?
It was actually very nerve-wracking because I was a freshman and our season was kind of riding on the line, and I remember that day was long waiting for the game to happen, and we ended up winning that game. We had one game left to determine our fate, and it was really fun to play in that.
You've done so much for this program. You've been a starter this year. You're tied for the SEC lead in appearances, and I'm just wondering, what have you enjoyed more, starting games for Tennessee or the role that you serve so many times now, finishing games for Tennessee?
I enjoy all of it. I think something the coaching staff said, the best availability is to be available. And, no matter what my role is, it doesn't matter. Everybody has a specific role on a team, and, you know, whatever role that is, you want to be the best at it.
What has it meant to you to play for Coach Vitello and to work with Frank Anderson?
Oh, it's meant a lot to me. I'm just glad they, you know, kind of gave me the opportunity as a freshman to come in and play right away. They both have helped me in so many ways, not only as a player, but as a person too, and I'm very grateful they were my coaches.
You've done a great job of making yourself available. Only one player in the SEC has more wins than you. You and Chad Dallas have the same number, and then you, at one point you were top five in saves in the conference. What has it meant to you to have the staff have that much confidence in your ability as well as availability to go multiple times in the same weekend?
Oh, that means a lot. It means they have a lot of trust in me, and you know, I love, you know, being trusted on the mound. I love getting the ball in big situations like that, and you know, fortunate enough for me, it's worked out in my favor.
There have been so many that have stepped up and made the most of big moments out of the bullpen. You and Redmond have the same number of games finished. What's it like to know that if your number isn't called, somebody else who can get in there and do the job just as well is ready and available?
It feels really good. Me and Redmond, we've kind of been in the same role the past 2 years, and you could also throw in Kirby and Mark McLaughlin in there too. It's really nice having, you know, other pitchers that have your back and stuff like that to come in games and finish it, you know, maybe when you don't have your best stuff that day.
How do you manage being ready, knowing that, I mean, for instance, against LSU, you worked in all three games, but knowing that there's a pretty good chance you're going to work on Friday, and if they need you for a quick out on Saturday or even for more work on Sunday, how do you manage a weekend, I mean, just being ready capability?
I think that comes from our strength coach, Q. You know, he preaches being ready at any moment, and you know, we do arm care and stuff like that, and mobility and conditioning and stuff like that, which I think all leads into, you know, being able to go or, you know, pitch in three different games in 3 days.
Have you always had that ability to bounce back as quickly as you do now for Tennessee?
Probably my first year, no, but I think, you know, going through their structural program of throwing, you know, weightlifting and stuff like that, I think has led to me to be able to do that now that I'm a senior.
So much is determined when you play that first game of a weekend, and it's been such an outstanding tandem for Tennessee. Normally, Chad Dallas starting and you finishing. What's it been like to kind of develop that duo, or that dynamic duo personality with Chad?
Oh, that's been really fun. That guy's a goofball. he's always got some jokes up his sleeve, but, you know, he kind of made a joke at the beginning of last year when our season got cut short that we were kind of like a dynamic duo, so to speak. But it's been really fun, and you know, I love that guy, and I love coming in after him.
Is there a different feel at all to pitching in the first game of a series compared to pitching in the last game of a series? Tennessee has done so well. Five times the last game of the series has decided the weekend. Is there a difference between game one and game three in your mind, and just a feel when you get on the mound?
There's a little bit of a difference, obviously, because the first game of a series is kind of like the momentum swing of the series, but both games are just as important, and there's a little bit of a hype to a Friday game that you can't really get anywhere else in the SEC. But I believe, you know, both games are just as important.
I know that there's been a partner in crime that's been with you every step of the way, and that's Evan Russell. What's it been like to see the national spotlight find him with some of the big games he's had, as well as writing his own chapter of Tennessee baseball history?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, we've lived together 3 of the 4 years that I've been here. He's one of the most confident guys I've ever played with. He believes in himself tremendously. Other than that, I mean, I love seeing that he's getting this national spotlight, too. He deserves all of it.
You and Evan signed with the previous staff. What was the connection that you had with Tennessee, and what's it been like to follow through and be able to help Tennessee build as a program?
I think that's, you know, the whole reason that, you know, the 8 seniors that you talk about came here was to change the program and change the culture of what Tennessee baseball is. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that, and it kind of speaks for itself, you know, the way that we've progressed over the last 4 years.
I know that Coach Vitello wants you to focus on game one first and then game two after that, and there's still 11 games on the schedule, but what is it like to see single-digit numbers next to the name of the University of Tennessee, to see it be a top-five program? How rewarding is that for you and your teammates?
Oh, it's very rewarding. You know, it's been nothing but, you know, a grind since freshman year, you know, going from winning 29 games to winning, you know, 40-something games. I mean, it's been really fun, and it's nothing but, you know, a testament to the coaching staff for building a culture in us that, you know, you have to earn what you get, and it's been a fun ride the last 4 years to finally get to a point where, you know, we're like number 5 or number 4 in the nation, and it's very cool to see.
How different, I mean, I don't know how much you hear when you've been in the bullpen, but I imagine in some areas quite a lot, but I would just imagine that the feel from opposing fans has also changed drastically, knowing that Tennessee's not a pushover anymore.
Yeah, a little bit. There's a lot of chirping that goes on, especially a little bit the Texas A&M. That was a little hectic there. But, I mean, that's pretty much anywhere you go in the SEC. There's always going to be fans that, you know, heckle you a little bit. But I think that's something that you can kind of feed off of and, you know, give you a little bit of motivation going into a series.
You've been someone who's usually competed during the summer, and your last summer experience was had to be wonderful going up to Cape Cod. How different was last summer when there was absolutely no baseball?
It was a lot of different. I mean, we couldn't really do anything else, and I lived at the time I lived with Chase Wallace, Will Heflin, and Zach Daniels, and there's literally nothing we could do. So we, you know, would throw baseball in a parking lot, or, you know, just sit around and try to find things to do to get better. So going from, you know, playing summer baseball to, you know, doing absolutely nothing and just preparing for the next season was very different and honestly a little bit boring.
Well, I'll say this, you found one way to pass the time that I thought was especially humorous, and that was on Twitter. You for a while you were journaling how many days without baseball and the different things you were doing. Where did that inspiration come from? Because some of them were just simply outstanding.
I just had to do something to, you know, to pass the time, and I thought it was pretty funny. I had to get, you know, help from my roommates too. And yeah, it was fun. I needed something to do, and, you know, I might as well do something on Twitter, you know, get some laughs out of it.
You've had some teammates in your time at Tennessee that are now into the start of their pro careers. What's it been like to see Garrett Crochet do what he's doing, making it to the White Sox, as well as guys like Garrett Stallings and Zach Lingenfelt are now at the dawn of their pro careers?
That's been really cool to see. Crochet, he, you know, as a guy, the stereotypical type would be like he's, you know, not a good teammate, blah, 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 but he's one of the best teammates I've ever played with, and not to mention he has a rocket for an arm. But, yeah, he deserves all the success in the world. He deserves to be where he's at right now. And for Stallings and a guy like Lingenfelter, it's really cool to see because I played with them for, you know, 2-3 years. And those guys work hard, and it's really cool to see them, you know, fulfill their dreams.
And if I could get a scouting report from you on a Vol to be, tell me about your brother Austin.
Oh, gosh. I mean, he's a fiery competitor. You know, he's not scared you're going to back down from anybody. Me and him are the complete opposite in body types, actually. So, he's skinny and getting muscled up now. But he's a competitor, and I think he'll do good things here at UT.
How awesome was it to see him twirl a perfect game earlier this year?
Oh, yeah. I wish I could have seen that. I heard saw it on Twitter, and I was like, he really do that? Like, asking my dad, and he was like, yeah. But, yeah, it was cool to see, and he deserves all the success too, because I know he works hard.
Well, you certainly have done such a great job for Tennessee, working so hard on the mound as well as in the classroom. Congratulations on being a part of what is a wonderful season that still has so much time left, as well as congratulations on completing your degree. Really appreciate it, Sean. Good luck tonight and the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
John Wilkerson's conversation with Tennessee pitcher Sean Hundley, Tennessee taking on Missouri, and that is going to be a three-game set. We'll see how they do against the Tigers on the road. The pitch tonight, first pitch is at 7:30, Saturday at 4 o'clock, Sunday at 2 p.m. And on the women's side, they just got underway recently as they are hosting Missouri, 6 o'clock tonight, 2 o'clock tomorrow, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. That's for the Lady Vols. All right, when we come back, we will be joined by Steve Hamer. First, I want to give you some scores from the Wells Fargo tournament. That's in Charlotte, North Carolina. So after Phil Mickelson opened with a 64, he struggled with a 75. He is 3 under par, but the scoring has not been really good today. Scott Stallings of Knoxville, he's tied for 13. Shot a 69 yesterday. He's even par through 14 today, so he's 2 under. 2 under par is tied for 13th. That tells you how tough the course is playing. Peter Malnati of Knoxville, 67 first day, then a 74. He's 1 under for the tournament. He is tied for 23rd. Both will comfortably make the cut. The projected cut is at 2 over. At 6 under in the clubhouse, Matt Wallace, Gary Woodland, and Patrick Rogers. Pleased now to be joined by VFL Steve Hamer. Steve, how you doing?
Jimmy, I'm doing fantastic, man. I hope that you are doing great as well.
Absolutely. Looking forward to a terrific weekend. Great weather out here right now. Hey, I want to ask you about a couple of NCAA proposals. One is they're looking at calling a technical foul if somebody flops. Now, It used to be that you would give a warning. I have a little bit of concern because I don't like giving officials any more judgment calls. I think they have enough trouble with them as they are. But do you think it's justifiable to give a technical foul for players that flop?
You know, I'm with you. I totally concur, Jimmy. I try to limit the amount of calls, if you will, already in a collegiate basketball game. I think there's far too many calls. It interrupts the flow of a basketball game sometimes. And, you know, you're talking about some situations in which a guy flops and now you're calling technical fouls. I don't like that. You know, I like the warnings. I like for the official to talk to the player. But in terms of giving him more power and interrupting the game even more, because, Jimmy, let's face it, this will be one of those situations in which it's going to be replayed.
Right.
It's going to be reviewed. So now let's further interrupt the flow of the game, go to the monitor again for the 51st time, and see if this guy actually flopped or not. So that's going to be a tough, tough situation. I hope that we don't go down that road of dealing with flops at this point.
Now, another one out there, and excuse me if you've been asked this before, but they're thinking about adding a sixth foul for the college player. I would think most people 7 feet would love that one, but I'll get your take on it in just a second. I'm in favor of this, and the only reason is to me, officiating is so poor. I've watched so many games where they make a couple of bad calls against the star player for setting an illegal screen when it wasn't an illegal screen or whatever, and then the next thing you know, the best player's sitting out the first 15 minutes of the first half. So there's a part of me that feels like I'd like to give them a sixth foul. I know they do it in the NBA because they play 8 more minutes. Do you think granting a sixth foul in college is justifiable?
I think it's very justifiable. You look at what happened to Tennessee basketball at a couple of different points this year where E. Pons, remember playing Alabama here, picked up 2 to 3 early fouls and had to sit out for the remainder of that first half and never really got into the flow of the game against Alabama. You know, they went on to win that game going away. But then you look at the tournament as well. E. Pons picked up a couple of quick, terrible calls, in my opinion. You know, I'm a bit of a homer, but I remember a screen in which he was called for an illegal screen that was just outrageous, ridiculous.
Yep.
But that took him out of the flow of the game as well. So, you know, let's be honest here. We want to maximize the opportunity for the most valuable players on each team to play. You know, fans want to come out. They pay money to see these guys play, not to have the officials interject themselves and thus taking the most important guys on the floor out of the game. And maybe they never get into the rhythm of the game, which happened to Tennessee quite often this year. So I'm all for, you know, that extra foul. I would have loved to, you know, have that happen back in my heyday, you know. I don't know that I ever had a heyday, but back when I played, you know, that would be very beneficial for me to have that extra foul. But, you know, I'm all for it.
There's some people think that it's going to lead to more brutality. I don't think so. I don't think that, oh, I got an extra foul, so I'm going to knock the heck out of somebody. I don't think they play that kind of basketball much anymore. So that's not the issue for me. And somebody wrote, well, not that many star players fouled out. Yeah, that's because they took them out of the game with 15 minutes left in the first half. That's why they didn't foul out. So I didn't think that was a very good argument.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, you take the best player out of the game, and, again, it completely messes up the chemistry. It messes up the flow of the game. And it potentially has a direct impact on the outcome of the game, Jimmy.
Yeah.
So let these guys play. It's not going to create a Kevin McHale and Dennis Rodman. It's not going to create that type of atmosphere, but it is going to allow these guys to, if they are called for an inadvertent, you know, foul in the first half, it won't cost them because it won't have them sit out for large periods of the game.
I haven't been able to verify this, but I was talking to a football coach early this week, and he told me there was a presentation made to this particular staff in which somebody said, that 30% of football players that enter the transfer portal don't find a home. That's stunning to me that many of them would find themselves in that position. Steve, does that suggest that these players that enter the transfer portal need to proceed with caution?
Very much so. It tells me that they're getting some bad advice. They're getting some bad intel. You know, you've got to understand that, you know, these players have to become comfortable in the growth zone. And maybe the growth zone is these guys understanding that, look, maybe I didn't come here to play for this coach, but I could end up having a tremendous amount of playing time. Maybe I could expand my game. Maybe I can get better by sticking it out. But, you know, when you got people, you know, over your shoulder and in your ear telling you, man, you need more playing time. You know, you're not getting enough playing time. You're not getting enough buckets. You're not getting enough, you know, exposure. Then all of a sudden you got the guys saying, well, you know, maybe I should transfer. And that's why you end up with 2,100, 2,200 players in the transfer portal. And, Jimmy, there's not going to be a home for everyone. Yeah. So now what are these guys going to do with that bad intel, with that bad advice? Sometimes the best option is just sticking around and making the most out of that opportunity.
And that's the thing. I'm torn a little bit because on this transfer stuff, I think that if you grant the one-time transfer, you almost encourage some players to quit. I got benched or the coach yelled at me, I'm going to the transfer portal. But then on the other hand, there's a part of me that wants to do what's best for the student-athlete, so I'm a little bit torn on that issue. I do want to ask you this. So we have seen the Tennessee roster. We believe we know what that roster is going to look like. What would be your starting five? Who do you see starting for Tennessee in the first game this upcoming season?
Wow. Jimmy, that's a tough one, but I'll take a stab at it. You know, I think they're going to be so much more balanced this upcoming season than they were last year. So for that, you know, I've got to put Fulkerson at the four. You know, he's yep. going to be my centerpiece. I got to put him at the four. Then I'm going to start Kennedy Chandler day one at the point guard position. I think he's going to bring so much to the floor. Now, is he going to be a 20-point scorer a night? No. I don't think that's the type of player he's going to be. But he's going to be the facilitator. He's going to be a guy that if he needs to take shots, he will take shots. He'll knock them down, but he's going to push the ball. And therefore, you know, I'm going to have Brandon Huntley Hatfield in the starting lineup playing the three. I'm going to have him there. I'm going to have either Josiah Jordan James or Victor Bailey or Santiago Biscobi playing that two. Just depends on the matchups that we've got. And then I'm going to play Jonas Adoo. I'm going to put him in at the five. He's going to give us great length. He's going to put on some muscle. He's got to get stronger, got to get a little tougher. But from everything that I'm hearing about this kid, he's got tremendous work ethic, and he's ready to come in and work right away. But Jimmy, just beyond that, think of the bench that we've got now. You got the Meshack kid, who I don't know if you've seen video of this guy working out, but, man, he looks like a monster. You know, he looks like he's ready to go right now. And you've got all the other guys, the complimentary pieces that we can put in. So, you know, I just can't wait. I cannot wait for day one.
Well, that would be a tall lineup as well. If you went with James, then you're 6'6", 7 foot, 6'9", 6'9". That's pretty good size right there. Yeah. Okay. NBA question. So give me your take on Russell Westbrook. He is one triple-double shy of Oscar Robertson's career NBA record. He has he leads the NBA, get a load of this, since the All-Star break, he has more assists and more rebounds than any player in the league. The last time somebody did that in the second half of the season was Wilt Chamberlain. How good is Russell Westbrook to you?
Jimmy, he's on an unbelievable tear. I read some stat that you could probably – tell me if I'm wrong or right about this, but I read a stat in which he could go scoreless for the rest of the season and still be averaging a triple-double. It just blows me away that he, at his size, attacks the basket like no other. He plays with reckless abandon, and he's making his team better. You know, the Wizards, they've gotten a lot better. You know, Bradley Beal has come along. He's averaging a lot of points as well. They got complementary pieces that are playing better. But you know, I never saw Oscar Robertson play. But, man, I hear people talk about that comparison all the time, that
yeah.
he is this version or this new age version of Oscar Robertson.
Yeah, I saw Oscar Robertson play. He didn't push it up the court as much as Westbrook. But, gosh, Oscar was incredible. But Westbrook is putting up unbelievable numbers as well. You mentioned Bradley Beal. Now, help me with this one. He has scored 40 points 29 times in his NBA career. They're 7-22 when he scores in the 40s. How do you explain that one?
He's taking too many shots, taking the onus on himself. He's not distributing the ball. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, when you got a guy that's averaging that many points over that period of time, or that scoring that many points over that period of time, it just tells me that he's taking way too many shots. And furthermore, I'd like to see his shooting percentage. Is he shooting at a good clip? Is this guy, you know, is it taking 40 attempts to get the 40 points? Because that just tells me not enough guys are involved. And most times, Jimmy, if you will share the ball, maybe the ball comes back to you and you have a better look at a basket. Or if you share the ball, your teammates get involved. And when you get bigs involved, especially, they're more apt to play harder on the defensive end. They're more apt to run the floor, and you just got to get everyone else involved. So that, I think, to me, that's why their record is so poor when he scores that amount of points.
Zion Williamson, he's out indefinitely with a broken ring finger. How good is Zion Williamson?
He's really good. Jimmy, you know, when he's averaging, I think he's averaging 20 points a game in the paint, which, you know, I believe that's one of the best averages since Shaquille O'Neal back in the day. I mean, he's
yep.
really good. The thing that I don't understand, Jimmy, is why don't more teams lay on that right shoulder? Because oftentimes, every time you see Zion Williamson catch the ball in the paint, he's going over that right shoulder. So why don't more teams lay on that right shoulder? But, man, you talk about just a beast on the inside that at his size that can elevate quickly and get off of the floor, that can run the floor. He is unbelievable, and that's going to be a big-time loss for the Pelicans.
If I guarded him, I would just flop and dare him to call a technical. all right, Steph Curry, 34 games this year with 30 points. That's the most by a player 32 years or older since Kobe Bryant 9 years ago. Is Steph Curry the best shooter you've ever seen?
I think he is. And I grew up watching what I thought at the time was the best shooter and probably the best trash talker at the time, and that was Larry Bird.
Yeah.
You know, I well remember times in which Bird would take a shot and turn around and look at the bench and talk trash and knock the shot down. Not the most athletic guy in the world, but, man, he could create space and shoot over anyone. But Steph Curry, to me, surpasses that. I think, Jimmy, because he handles the ball so well, you can't run a double team at him because he's going to find the open teammate. You know, but you got to guard him at midcourt. So, you know, he is the best pure shooter that I have ever seen.
All right, one more question. Do you think that the losing streak or the struggling of the Nets and Lakers, do you care? Does that matter going into the playoffs, or does it really matter that they're just healthy?
I think it matters. You know, Jimmy, it's hard to just flip the switch, turn the light on and say, you know, I know that, you know, LeBron's been out and KD's been out and Harden's been out, but as soon as the playoff, you know, game is tipped, the ball is tipped, we're fine. We're in mid-season form. I don't subscribe to that theory. I think that chemistry is really going to hurt the Nets going down the stretch here. And furthermore, if the Lakers are not careful, you know, the game tonight is huge between them and the Trailblazers because
yep.
If they lose that game tonight, it knocks them into the play-in game scenario. And that's, you know, that's anybody's game at that point. So It's going to be difficult for both of those teams, in my opinion, to win a championship as they are constructed with the injuries.
Steve Hamer, great to catch up with you. Always enjoy it. Thank you for doing so. We look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Jimmy, same here. And by the way, excellent interview with Bobby Mays yesterday. I really enjoyed that piece that you did. Kudos to Bobby Mays.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciated him joining us. Thanks, Steve. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
And by the way, I misspoke earlier. When Al Brown signed off, I said, talk to you next year. I meant next week. We'll have Al Brown on for several more weeks. A couple of notes, Scott Stallings has made a birdie, so he is now tied for 10th at the Wells Fargo tournament. That is at Quail Hollow in Charlotte. He hit 3 under par, tied for 10th. He's 1 under today through 15. The top 10 from Todd McShay, his mock draft for next year. Kevon Thibodeau of Oregon, number 1. Number 2, Keaton Slovich, quarterback at Southern Cal. Then he's got Derek Stingley, who is from LSU at cornerback. Offensive tackle Charles Gross of Mississippi State. Might not have heard much about him, but I keep seeing him up on these boards. Number 7 pick, Sam Howell, quarterback, North Carolina. Number 9 pick, Alabama offensive tackle Evan Neal. And at number 10, Florida defensive back Kair Elam. So those are his top 10 with a handful of SEC players. Now, he's got at number 15 quarterback Malik Willis of Liberty. And then he also has another quarterback, Desmond Ridder of Cincinnati, going number 16. 5 quarterbacks in the top 16. And he's got Shane Rattler at number 11. Shane Rattler is the Heisman favorite, according to Caesar. So that's a look at the mock draft of Todd McShay with ESPN. All right, that's going to do it for the show today. We certainly appreciate those that call. We appreciate all of our guests. Appreciate Vince Farrar for joining us. I want to thank the folks here at Oak Ridge Nissan. Boy, they do a terrific job. They've got great deals on all of the vehicles, tremendous inventory right here on the lot. You don't have to shop around or order a car. You can find one right here. Essentra, the Nissan, the Rogue, they've got so much to choose from. And know that they have sold more Nissans than any dealer in the state of Tennessee, the number one dealer right here at Oak Ridge Nissan. We appreciate them having us here. We appreciate you listening. This has been Sports Talk.